from the wind blows puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
You know, it never ceases to amaze me how much commitment Gordon Goldsborough has to this segment. He's always thinking of new ways to approach this. He always kicks it up a notch. And today he's in the studio with a rather large prop. And I have no idea what it is, but I'm excited. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia. Yeah, it's interesting, and I hope you'll enjoy looking at it.
So describe it to our listeners, because we haven't even opened it yet. I don't know what it is.
It is a large book. It would be a little wider than a foot wide. It's probably a little more than 2 feet high, about maybe an inch and a half thick. It's a big, big book. I had a heck of a time carrying it in here, in fact.
And it's old. It is old and heavy.
We'll get to that.
Okay, yeah. Well, yeah, of course it has to be old to be part of this segment. Gordon, remind us of the clue.
Well, I said we were going to talk about a pair of rare historical documents that demonstrate the virtues of dumpster diving.
Was this found in a dumpster?
Yes, indeed.
No way.
Indeed it was, yes.
Okay, so what is it? What are we talking about?
Well, our story today begins with something called the Manitoba Free Press. Actually, that's the original name of today's Winnipeg Free Press. Listeners may not know that the first issue of the Free Press occurred in November of 1872. You know, that's a long time ago. But actually, that is not the first newspaper that we had here in Manitoba. The first newspaper, that honor goes to something called the Nor'wester, and it was published in 1859. Of course, before Manitoba was even Manitoba. But of all of the 20 newspapers that were founded between 1859, when the Nor'wester first began publishing, up to 1890, of 20 newspapers, only the Free Press survives today. So in other words, the Winnipeg Free Press is Manitoba's oldest newspaper. You know, it preserves a wealth of useful historical information. You know, it provides basically a day-to-day account of the goings-on of the community. And, you know, this is far richer than you can get from any book or memoir. I mean, if you want to know what was it like to live at that time, you know, the newspaper would be the way to do it. So back when I was a young university student, I actually spent my free time at the library reading through old back issues of Manitoba newspapers.
I can just imagine a young Gordon Goldsborough already on this path to resurfacing local history. So those old newspapers that you were poring through as a student, they still exist?
No, actually, what I was reading were microfilms. In other words, they were reels of film where someone had taken the original newspaper and photographed it page by page so that then I could reel this microfilm reel through a machine and it would actually project it onto a wall so I could read it that way. So no, I wasn't reading the original. Although there are originals out there in libraries and in archives, but more and more, if you want to read these old newspapers today, you can go online. You know, you can, for example, go to the archive of the Winnipeg Free Press and see back issues. And in fact, the nice thing about those is they are searchable. You can actually search for particular words. But, you know, the originals, I think there is still something to be said for the original thing. So that is what we have here today.
I was just going to say there, I mean, it's one thing to see on microfilm or online, but to really get a sense of the history, to have an actual original copy. So are you going
to touch it with your hands? Absolutely.
Touch it, smell it, see it. Are you going to open this book
yes.
for us now?
Okay, so I'll open the first page here.
It is big as well, and it's falling apart.
Well, I mean, if you were 147 years old, I have a feeling you wouldn't look so good.
Fair point.
Okay, let's. Now, if you want to read this, the very top, it says Daily Free Press. What does it gives the date below that? What does it say?
Okay, Volume 1, Winnipeg, Tuesday, April the 6th, 1875. Wow.
Yeah.
So this is a document from 1875.
This is the original newspaper. I mean, this is the paper itself. This isn't a copy. This isn't a microfilm. This is the original newspaper from, well, 144 years ago.
And I'm just glancing through the articles, but each of them tells a story. So just one thing that stands out to me. Miss Shaw's private classes. Miss Shaw, formerly lady principal of the Winnipeg Ladies School, will open classes in the old building, James Street, on Thursday 8th. English per month. This is the terms, $1.75 per month. Mm. Look at that. Every article has a story behind it.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, it's fascinating to just look at the advertisements to see the sorts of businesses that were operating at that time, you know, the kind of problems. If somebody lost a cow, they would put an ad in the newspaper. Anybody find a lost cow, let me know.
Buggies for sale.
There you go. It really is a day-by-day account. You know, so if you want to get a sense of what it was like living at that time, you basically just read the daily paper. And each day you see a story, and then you see the next story. The next day it picks up where the last one left off. You know, you can really get a true sense of living at that time.
How did you get your hands on this book?
Okay, well, there is the story. So a friend of mine, and I should say, I'm going to be purposely a little vague on the details because to protect the privacy of some of the people involved, let's just say a friend of mine was walking by a library here in Winnipeg, and he noticed people putting some large things in the dumpster. And he was naturally curious, and so after they went away, he went and looked to see what they were dumping. And what it was numerous volumes of these papers. Now, I should tell you about how these books came to be. You know, so of course, when the daily paper was printed, the newspaper would distribute it out to various places. Libraries did subscribe to the newspaper, and each day when the paper was now yesterday's news, they'd add it to a stack. And after a period of time, after a few months, maybe a half a year, maybe even a full year, they'd have a whole stack, and then they would take those to a bindery and get them bound into a book. And the idea, of course, is that now you have a little bit more robust way to store these newspapers so that if you wanted to go back and look at the newspaper from last year or 5 years ago or 20 years ago, you could do that. And so there are a few copies of these old bound volumes. Well, I personally, as a result of my friend fishing them out of the garbage, I personally have about 30 or 40 of these bound volumes. And, you know, you have to ask the question, well, why would the library throw out these things? Well, possibly it's because they had duplicates and they didn't need two copies of the same newspapers. But I still have to wonder, well, why wouldn't they just find somebody who would love them like me? Well, I don't know. You'd have to, I guess, ask the librarians their rationale for just discarding them. But if it weren't for my friend fishing them out of the garbage, these would now be in a landfill, you know, benefiting nobody.
Which is heartbreaking, actually, because it's history.
Mm-hmm.
Just looking through it now, I could see why you have 30 to 40 of them, because you can just dip into them, right?
That's
dip
right.
In, open a page. Now, you said there would be two rare historical documents. What's the second one?
Right. I didn't bring the second one in this morning, but I'll describe it. So it's a large book. In fact, it's even larger than this one. It would be probably almost 3 feet wide, about a foot and a half tall. It's about maybe 2 to 3 inches thick. It's really heavy. That's why I brought this one. It's a little bit lighter. And actually, this one's a fair more recent find. I actually was sure shown this about 2 weeks ago. Somebody contacted me. They said I might be interested in seeing this book. So I went and met them at a library, it turns out. And pouring through it, what it turned out to be was daily ledgers for the Manitoba Free Press. Again, the predecessor of today's Winnipeg Free Press. This particular book consisted of pages from 1914 to 1935. Every page was basically an accounting of a month in the life of the newspaper. You know, so the first page was January of 1914, the next page, February 1914, and so on. And they contained an absolute treasure trove of information.
Like what kind of things?
Well, it would tell you, for example, what the newspaper spent its money on. It would say, you know, this month we spent this much on wages, this much on insurance, on repairs, telephones, equipment. Basically, if you wanted to know what did it take to operate a newspaper, this would give you details on that. But even more, it gave you a summary of circulation. It tells you how many copies of the newspaper were printed that month. You know, how many of them were distributed in Winnipeg here? How many of them were sent out to other places around Manitoba? You know, so I expect that, you know, scholars of communications, people, you know, 50, 100 years from now who want to know what was it like, you know, to run a newspaper, this book will give them an absolute treasure trove of useful information.
What stood out to you about some of the information that you saw?
I was interested in the circulation data, you know, because I'm fascinated to know what were the trends in circulation. So I actually spent a little bit of time, a few hours, looking through this big ledger going from 1914 to 1935.
What changes did you find there?
Well, okay, so people probably know I'm a scientist, and scientists live by graphs.
Yeah. And you have two graphs with you right now.
I do.
Yeah.
And basically, I created these graphs by looking at each month's page. I went through every page, page by page, pulling out the circulation data. So on this graph, I have the total monthly circulation, how many copies of the paper were printed. And it goes from about 2.3 million copies down to about 1.6 million. That, in that period of time, that's the number of, that were printed in a month. And as you can see, I think there are some noticeable trends. It wasn't just a straight line going across. They didn't produce the same number every single month. So in fact, what you see, for example, is that there's the biggest peak in the whole period of time is right in here in around the late 1918 period.
So definitely falls within the war years, right?
Exactly. Because, of course, many people had the family members serving overseas. They were desperate to know how they were doing, you know, if they were winning the war, if they were losing the war. The newspaper was really the way to find out. And what you may not be able to notice, you have to look really closely to see it, is that there is actually one missing number on the graph corresponding to May of 1919.
What was that?
The Winnipeg General Strike.
Of course. We just been talking about it all year. Yeah.
It wasn't
just
a strike of, you know, milkmen. It was a strike of many people, and including the people who printed the paper. So they stopped printing the paper. So the statistics ended and they didn't have data for that month.
So that's history right there in a graph for you.
And it decreased through the 1920s, sort of bottomed out in the mid-1920s, then increased up to about 1929. And then, well, you can see here, just a plummetous drop. Well, of course, that's the beginning of the Great Depression.
Yeah.
You know, not everybody could afford a newspaper. You might have wanted one, but you couldn't afford it. And so the newspaper circulation just dropped. So that's one of the trends I thought were kind of neat in it.
Certainly reflects the current affairs of the day.
Well, exactly. And if you wanted to get a sense of that, this book, this ledger was just a phenomenal source. And then here, this other graph shows us what proportion of the total circulation was here in Winnipeg. You know, it started out about 50%. About half of the papers were in Winnipeg. The other half were outside of Winnipeg. But in the short period of time that we're talking about in this particular book, it goes from 50% to 65%. In other words, it was becoming more and more urban, moving away from the rural roots of the newspaper. And, you know, what's interesting is that the name change from the Manitoba Free Press to the Winnipeg Free Press occurred in 1931, right in this period. You know, so what it probably says is they were beginning to realize that more and more people in Winnipeg were depending on this paper. It was becoming more of a Winnipeg thing. Well, you might as well acknowledge that by just naming the newspaper the Winnipeg Free Press as opposed to the Manitoba Free Press that it had been before. You know, so there's all kinds. And this is just, I spent 2 hours digging through this. This is what I came up with, you know. The story then is that if this book had been discarded, as it was probably going to be, you know, future historians would lose all this wonderful information.
So what's going to happen to both of these rare documents?
Well, I maybe should just fill in the story of this particular one. So the Book of the Ledger from the Free Press was actually found in the building of the Winnipeg Free Press because the current building that the Free Press occupies is not the original one. They were originally, earlier, they were in a building on Carleton, and that building was being gutted to make way for its present use. Well, one of the contractors that was involved in that work was noticing that there was stuff coming out of the building, and he went like, what the heck is this? And he pulled this, again, out of a dumpster. Again, an incident of dumpster diving, saving a valuable historical document. And they showed it to me and said, well, would you want it? And I go, well, you know, I'd love it, because they say it's such a valuable resource that I just cannot envision it ever going to a dump.
What's going to happen to these rare documents?
Well, I intend that in time, all my historical documents that I've amassed will be deposited in a formal archive, because I really want them to be protected in perpetuity for the benefit of future generations of people. So, you know, anybody out there who has these sort of documents, keep in mind, they are often a rare and precious indication of past history. They should be saved.
What should they do with them then if they do come across something like this?
Well, get in touch with somebody who can advise you on what should be done. You know, there are professionals in many of the communities around Manitoba, people who work in museums and archives.
Manitoba Historical Society?
Manitoba Historical Society. You can contact me and I can give you some advice as well. So just don't throw them out. I hate to think about having to go climb in dumpsters to find these sort of things.
Please don't, Gordon. Please don't. Thank you so much. This was fantastic. I love that you brought in a prop today. What about next week? What's the clue?
Well, we're going to look at a vacant building near Porter's La Prairie that if you had seen it in the 1940s and 50s, it would have been filled to overflowing with what looked like large black poodles.
So you'll be bringing in a black poodle next weekend?
No.
Fair enough. Gordon, thank you so much.
See you next week.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.